How many of you here use a laptop computer? All right, just about everybody. How many of you brought it to the conference? Okay. How many of you have any idea really what makes that thing work? Okay, a couple of you actually do. Good. Well, I'm glad that most of you don't, because we only have 15 minutes each here to talk, and I decided to talk about this idea of reproducing leaders using a metaphor that we're all familiar with, but few of us have really any idea how it actually works, and it's a computer. I do know that a computer has three components to it. I do know that much. You've got your hardware, and you've got your software, and you've got your operating system, okay? So work with me on this just a little bit, okay? And hopefully this will be something that you can remember. I want to begin with the hardware necessary for reproducing leaders. And the hardware, if you think about it, I mean, it's the stuff you can touch and feel, right? It's the stuff you can touch and feel. You can pick it up. And when it comes to reproducing leaders, it might seem basic, but the stuff that you can really touch and feel is still people. People. And we found at CCC that there's probably three key sources for finding high-capacity leaders, and we call them leadership pipelines. And that's a term that I'm sure many of you have used and have heard before, leadership pipelines. And I want to talk about three different leadership pipelines, and the first one is the internal pipeline. The internal pipeline. The internal pipeline consists of emerging leaders that are already in your church. Those are emerging leaders that are already a part of your church or congregation. And we found that the best environment, all right, the best environment for identifying emerging leaders within your church is in your small groups. Small groups. Our greatest source of emerging leaders and staff has no doubt come through our reproducing small groups. Three reasons, real quick, and this isn't in your notes, I don't think. You might want to put this in the margin. Why I would say small groups are the best environment for identifying emerging leaders. And the first one is this. Small groups are a great place to receive honest feedback. Small groups are a great place to receive honest feedback. If there's a place where you're going to have people that you can trust, that you can count on to give you honest feedback, it's got to be in a small group. And emerging, growing leaders, reproducing leaders need honest feedback. The second reason I think small groups are the best place is that small groups are a great model for reproducing campuses and churches. If you think about it, a small group is really a microcosm of the church. And it takes the very same things to reproduce a small group, okay, as it does to reproduce a campus or a church. And so what better place to develop emerging leaders than within the context of a small group? I mean, if you can't do it in a small group, if you can't reproduce there, you're not going to reproduce elsewhere. Third thing, small groups provide a clear leadership career path. And from day one, CCC has applied META principles, M-E-T-A, META principles. And I know this has been around for a long time. We still believe in it. We've been hugely influenced by Carl George. His first book was Prepare Your Church for the Future. His other book was Coming Church Revolution, 9 Keys to Effective Small Groups. How many of you have read one of those three books? Oh, good. That's good stuff. Good. And he suggested that the META structure provides a career path for what he calls rising leaders. And here's what it looks like for us. We still use the Roman numerals, okay? X represents a leader of 10. An L represents a coach or a leader of 5 leaders, okay? So 50 people. And a D represents a staff person, which would be responsible for about 500 people or 10 coaches. And so it happens time after time. A person begins as an apprentice leader, then they become a leader, all right? If they're proven successful as a leader, they've reproduced their small group, then they become an apprentice coach, and then from an apprentice coach to a coach, then an apprentice staff person, until they're a staff person, and at that point, they're actually coaching coaches. That's our career path, and we've seen this play out over and over again. Almost every one of our campus pastors, church planters, have walked through that career path. Recently, we've started doing something that we call talent reviews with our staff. Some of you have probably been doing this for a long time, but one of the things that we do with this talent review is it's a chance for our staff to identify the emerging leaders on their teams and in their ministries. And one of the questions on that talent review our staff is expected to answer is this: who are your potential apprentices? Even as a staff person, you're expected to have a shadow, somebody that's you're apprenticing. Staff or non-staff, who are the emerging leaders, future staff people in your ministries? All right, that's the internal pipeline. The second part of the leadership hardware, kind of sticking with this computer metaphor, is the external pipeline. The external pipeline, and that consists of emerging leaders that are outside of your church. All right, internal is inside, external is outside, and there's three ways we're developing our external pipeline. Three ways, and there's probably others, but I'll give you three. One is through internships. Internships, and we're looking to universities and colleges all the time for emerging leaders that we can bring on our staff to serve as an intern. Eric Metcalf, who's the host for this track, who's just up here, he started as an intern at CCC. The second way we're developing our external pipeline is through leadership residencies. Leadership residencies. Most of our leadership residents are recent college graduates, emerging church planters, career changers. And this is a more intense 6-month to 1-year program for people interested in being a part of a church plant or a campus launch. And our residents are mentored by one of our campus pastors. And we hope to have 5 or 6 leadership residents in the next year. And then the third way that we're developing our external pipeline is through partnerships. And we're finding that the partnerships we develop are feeding our external pipeline. Our new thing, Affiliate Network, now includes 12 churches. In addition, we have partnerships with organizations like Stadia, Orchard Group, Wheaton College, and some others. Just this past week, we had a sharp young Hispanic pastor connect with our Pilsen campus pastor. Pilsen is in a Hispanic community near the city of Chicago. And he was referred to us by our new thing plant in Knoxville. All right, so that's the leadership hardware. You've got your internal pipeline, you've got your external pipeline, and the third part is this, and that's our emerging staff pipeline. Emerging staff pipeline. And this pipeline consists of leaders that are currently on our staff. And we're finding it increasingly important to ask our staff, how do you envision, for lack of a better word, your career developing? How do you envision your career developing? On our staff's talent review, in addition to asking who are your potential apprentices, we also ask them, to whom are you a potential apprentice? In other words, who would you like to be developing you? Who do you possibly see yourself replacing at some point? And see, doing this will not only expand our emerging staff pipeline, but it'll also keep our pipeline from leaking. Because I think our staff will see that we're interested in knowing about their future, how they see themselves developing. All right, so that's the hardware. You've got the internal pipeline, the external pipeline, and the emerging staff pipeline. Now, I want to give you a caution here. Don't become too dependent on any one of these pipelines. Now, I'm not sure if this, don't be too dependent on any one of these pipelines. Now, I'm not sure if this is a matter of growth, size, age, number of locations, but here's what we're learning about these pipelines as we look back over our shoulder over the past several years, okay? And again, this is sort of descriptive, not prescriptive. I'm just saying this is what's happened to us. I hope it'll help you. I've seen 3 phases, okay? In phase 1, and again, I don't know if this is about age, size, number of locations, or what, but this is how it's happened for us. In phase 1, for us, it was like years 0 to 6. We grew from about 0 to 500. We were too dependent on our external pipeline. Does that make sense? We were too dependent on our external pipeline. And I don't know if there's any way around this early on, but we failed to develop our internal pipeline very well. I think we were staffing.com's best customer, if you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. I mean, almost all of our hires were outside hires. And consequently, we experienced, you know, a good bit of turnover. And so my advice would be to, as early on as possible, begin to develop your internal pipeline, not only leaders and apprentice leaders of small groups, but be thinking about who are going to be your next staff people that are inside your church. Second thing, in phase 2, all right, phase 2, which for us was like about from 500 to 1,000, or 500 to 2,000, years, say, 7 to 12. During that phase, we were too dependent on our internal pipeline, and we neglected our external pipeline. Now, I remember at that time, we were fortunate. We had a fast-growing group of emerging leaders in our congregation that we knew would become future staff members. We even developed a group for them. We called it the What's Next group for guys that were thinking about possibly changing their career. We neglected our external pipeline. And then in phase 3, which for us, it was like from about 2,000 to 5,000, years 13 plus. And here's what it feels like right now. It feels like we're becoming overly dependent on our emerging staff pipeline. Here's what I mean by that. As our church grows up, our staff grows, we're doing a lot of staff shuffling. And I don't know, Wayne, if you and Matt can kind of relate to this or not, but we're looking to launch 7 new campuses in the next 5 years. And our first reaction is to ask, who on our staff may be the next campus pastor? Not a bad question, okay? We're thinking, okay, who'd like to make that move? But my concern is that if we're not careful, we might neglect our internal and external pipeline and simply rely too much on the staff shuffle, our emerging staff. All right, so that's the hardware. Now let's talk about the software. And I know I'm flying through this, but we don't have a whole lot of time. The software, in my mind, is the programs that are used to direct the operation of the computer. I think we're all familiar with that. I mean, this is what you actually see happening on your laptop, right? Okay? And when it comes to reproducing leaders, these are the things you would see that help us continue to develop emerging leaders at CCC. And one of these things is leadership community. From the very beginning at CCC, we've had a monthly gathering of leaders and apprentice leaders. And we follow Carl George's plan that includes those three vitamins he talks about, a vision, okay, huddle. Huddles are where small group leaders kind of come together and they encourage and challenge one another with a coach in the same group. And then skill, where we provide workshops for them to be developed and equipped. We also share three other things, and you might want to write this down. We share wins, all right, where we're winning, good stuff that's happening, how God's at work. We share challenges. All right, stuff that's tough that's going on that we're dealing with. And we also share best practices. And especially in a multi-site environment when you've got, you know, 8 different locations now coming together for leadership community, there's all sorts of best practices that are occurring out on the edges. We want to know about them so they can make all of us better. We share those at leadership community. Another part of our leadership software, something you would see if you were in the mix at CCC at all, is apprentice development. And I talked about this a little bit. But we challenge every leader, no matter what the role, to identify and develop an apprentice. And it follows a simple plan, and it looks like this. You've probably seen this before. I share it every time because it works. All right? Whether you're a worship leader, a small group leader, a kids' city leader, does not matter. If you're a sound tech leader, here's how it goes. I'm a leader, okay? I do. Mac's my apprentice. You watch, then we talk, right? Then I do. Then Mac will help. Okay, you help. So I'm backing off a little bit. I'm giving some responsibilities to Mac, but we always talk. We always debrief. We talk about what we experienced, what worked, what didn't work. How can we do better next time? Then it moves to the next phase. You do, all right, now Mac's going to do the leading. I back off further. I'm just helping now, and we talk. Then you do, and I watch. I'm beginning to turn the reins over to Mac completely. We still talk. We always talk. Talk about what we experienced. And then finally, you do. Mac's doing it now. And guess what? He's got another apprentice now. Somebody else watches. And then they talk. Simple process. Works for almost any leadership role you can imagine. The fourth part of our leadership software is coach development. And I had to mention this because I think our tendency, at least this is our experience, is to focus so much on leadership development that we neglect developing our coaches, that sort of middle layer of leadership. And for us, we know we cannot afford to hire enough staff to care for the number of leaders that God continues to send us. So we've got to train our coaches and let them care for our growing community of leaders. And so whatever it takes, don't neglect your coaches. A couple other parts of this leadership software, things that you would see if you came to CCC, one is turbo groups. Maybe you're familiar with what a turbo group is. It's a small group of apprentice leaders that function like a small group for a time with the goal of everyone being sent out to lead a small group. We also have a school for the arts. We quickly discovered that if it takes leaders to reproduce small groups, it takes artists to reproduce large groups. And our school for the arts helps us develop artists. We have over 400 students in our school for the arts at, I believe, 4 different locations now. And it's a huge help in developing artists. If you want more information about that, I'd be happy to talk to you. I could point you in the right direction for that for sure. Okay, so we looked at the hardware and the software of reproducing leaders. And, you know, whether you know anything about computers or not, there's one more thing you've got to have. And it's the operating system. It's the operating system. And to me, the operating system is really the most mysterious part of a computer. And if you're a Mac user, you probably have what? What's your operating system? Okay, OS X, right. And if you're a PC user, it's likely what? Windows XP? Something like that? Well, 2 things I know about operating systems, okay? That's about it. Number one, it's there. And number 2, you gotta have it to run the software. You got to have an operating system to run the programs, right? So I want you to think about your church culture like you might the operating system on your computer, because you have one whether you realize it or not. And Wayne has a great book on church culture that I encourage you to pick up. And without a doubt, culture can foster reproducing leadership. Because you can run the best of programs, but they're not going to work if you don't have an operating system, if you don't have the culture that fosters this reproducing leadership. So here's three words, and I could talk about this for a long time, but here's three words I want to leave you with, okay, that describe the operating system or culture of Community Christian Church. I think that helps us reproduce leaders. The first word is celebration. Celebration. We're always asking the question, where are we winning? And when I say where are we winning, it's really where is God at work? We're always looking for opportunities to celebrate wins. At the beginning of almost every meeting at CCC is that question, and we put it on the agenda. Where are we winning? You know, where is God at work? Where is he blessing you? What good things are happening? And, you know, celebration doesn't have to be a big party or an event. I mean, it can be something as simple as a conversation in the hallway, acknowledging somebody for what they've done. And of course, as much as anything, we try to celebrate leaders being reproduced. Well, the second word I would use to describe our operating system, our culture of leadership development and reproduction, is anticipation. So there's celebration and then anticipation, and that's asking the question, where are we going? Where are we going? And this is mostly about vision. But in a reproducing church culture, vision is articulated over and over again as many times and as many ways as possible. And vision can be communicated in different settings. Again, like celebration, it could be a one-on-one meeting over lunch. You're communicating vision. Maybe it's a small group gathering. It might be leadership community. It might be in your celebration services. We like to say that the four most important letters in the leadership alphabet are I-C-N-U. I see in you. And what some people need is to know that you see possibilities in them. And a big part of vision casting is just saying, hey, you know, I see in you. Well, the third word that describes our operating system or culture is evaluation. Evaluation. And that's asking the question, how are we doing? The key measure of a leader in a church that values reproducing leadership is really, how effective am I in reproducing myself? If you're a small group leader, you need to be asking yourself, hey, who am I bringing alongside myself and developing to become another small group leader? If you're a worship leader or a soundboard operator or a children's leader, the same question. Who am I developing? Who's my apprentice? Always asking, how are we doing? All right, so you've got your hardware, all right, your leadership pipelines, you've got your software, the programs you run to develop leaders, and your operating system, and that's about your culture. And I think I flew through that and tried to do it as quick as I could. And now, I guess it's Wayne. Wayne, are you up next? All right.
Take everything that you just heard and work that into the fabric of who you are. It's just outstanding, all of these things. Here's what we do to reproduce leaders. The first, and I want to go back and rewind the tape a little bit and talk to you about what John was talking about, is developing a culture in which leaders are reproduced, where potential is seen. Now, that culture is more important than you'll ever know. The culture is sort of like this. They once found a man that was frozen under the tundra for about 500 years. They exhumed his body from the ice. They actually took out of his stomach to see what he had eaten before the avalanche had hit. Some seeds were in his stomach, some berries that he had eaten. And did you know they took some of those into a lab setting and put them in some petri dishes, and some of those seeds began to sprout. You may have heard NASA finding some frozen bacteria or algae in Alaska that they say was frozen stiff for 3,000 years, and it came back to life. Now, you think about those seeds that have been frozen for years and years and years. What caused them to grow? Did you infuse life into the seeds? Did you generate new life? Did you teach it how to have life? No. All you did is they changed the culture, changed the atmosphere, changed the culture. And when there's a conducive culture to growth, God has put into many, many people already that potential for leadership. Here's what I would say to you. Start this way. Number one, love people, but more so, love the potential that lies within people. You just got to see their potential. Just think that as you pass by everyone, there's a sign on their chest, hanging from their neck, that says, please make me feel valuable today. Now, what I'm going to say has nothing to do with leaders. It has everything to do with leaders. It has nothing to do with leaders. It has everything to do with leaders. What is that? Start by learning to encourage, breathe out, believe in the potential of people, regardless if they're leaders or not. Write this scripture down. 2 Corinthians chapter 13 and verse 10, and then 2 Corinthians 10 and verse 8. Let me read it to you. It says this: even if I should boast somewhat further about our authority, which the Lord gave for building you up and not destroying you, I will not be put to shame. And then for 2 Corinthians 13, verse 10, in accordance with the authority which the Lord gave me for building you up and not tearing you down. Why does God give you authority? For what? To what? Build up and not... Every single one of you will have been given a measure, a modicum of authority as a shepherd, as a leader. God gives you that authority to build people up. And if you will use that authority correctly, God's going to give you more. Not only more authority, more people that need to be built up. Many times we use our authority incorrectly to let people know how cool we are or what we should have or whatever it might be. But God is saying, if you'll use your authority correctly, it will be huge. A little girl comes up in front of the church. You have not chosen me, but I have chosen you and pointed you that you should go forth and bear fruit and that your fruit should remain. John 15:16. She runs off. Now her friend goes, hey, good job. You shared the scripture you memorized in Sunday school. Oh, she said, I'm so nervous. But then the pastor comes along and says, hey, Susie. Yes. Hey, could I just say thank you for taking so much time to memorize that? It's my life verse. Many times I don't feel I measure up to God. But when I remember I didn't choose him, he chose me, everything changes. Can I just say thank you for blessing our whole church? Oh, okay. But when that pastor goes away, little Susie rides on that for 6 months. Same encouragement, but when it comes from someone with authority and they use it correctly, do you understand how huge that is? God has given you authority to build up. How do you get more authority to find leaders? Start with, regardless of who they are, start by using your authority. Here it is. Just start building somebody up. Just start building somebody up. There's a guy that came to me, an intern. I said, what do you want to do? Here's what he said. You know what I want to do, Wayne? I want to go into the hospital and pray for the sick and the sick people get up. I said, woo, that's pretty good. It's just all these interns, you know. I said, yeah, that's what you want. Yeah, I want to go and pray for the sick and they get healed. I said, oh, good. I said, now, why would you want to do that? He said, because, man, people come to know God. I said, wow, that's really your heart? Yeah, it's my passion. So that's good. It's a good passion. And he called his name Tommy. I said, hey, Tommy, if that's really your passion, are you like going to hospitals? When's the last time you prayed for anybody in a hospital? He said, what? Yeah, have you done a hospital call today yet? No. When was the last time you prayed for someone for healing, like after church, after service? Anybody? Do you love people in wheelchairs? Do you have any relationships with any of them at all? Do you love people that are hurting? When was the last time you went to a hospital? He said, well, I haven't been assigned yet. I said, You see, if that's what your passion is one day, you should be loving it today. Because you're not, let me just tell you, it ain't going to happen. The same is true with leaders. We say, we want to build leaders. Are you encouraging anybody today? No, not because you think they're a leader, just anybody. Beethoven was said in his later years he went deaf. But because he was a great composer and he'd compose all these scores, it was said that in his later years he would play a piano or a harpsichord and it was sorely out of tune because he couldn't hear. But when he would play his compositions, tears would roll down his face. You know why? Not because he heard the sound that that harpsichord was making. He heard the sounds that it should be making. And tears would roll down his face. We have to have the same heart. And what you do is you start to develop sort of a culture, as John was saying. A culture. And when you believe in the potential of people, boy, you help them. Let me just give you one more little story about that and how it kind of build a culture and people come to that. And remember, don't just love people. Love the potential that lies in people. and use your authority to breathe that out. Once that culture happens, not just with leaders, with anybody, then you'll see God add, not just leaders come. They will. God, though, will add to the number those that should be saved. His name was Bernard. Bernard said, you know, Wayne, my passion, my desire is one day to play guitar up here. And I said, oh, I said, are you good? And he said, oh, I'm okay. He was really good. But he said, I'm so scared. I said, what do you mean? He said, as soon as I start playing, a man, nervousness takes over me. And all the stuff I practice, I can't do. I said, you can do it. He said, no, I want to, but I can't. I said, let me help you in that. Really? Yeah. Here's what I want you to do. What? I said, starting next Sunday, I want you to play guitar in the service, the midweek service. He said, no, 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 I can't. That's what I'm afraid of. I said, no, no, I want you to get up there, get your electric guitar, and I want you to play. No, he said, no, no. I said, wait, wait, let me help you. This is what I want you to do. I want you to get up there, and I want you to play your electric guitar, but I don't want you to plug in. He said, what? Yeah, don't plug in any amp. He said, then no one will hear it. I said, very good, Glasshopper. Only two people will hear it. Hmm? You and Jesus. And when you're comfortable with Jesus hearing what you're playing, we'll plug you in. But if you don't want Jesus to hear it, or people to hear it, you just want Jesus to hear it, then you just stay unplugged. He did that for 6 months. And we finally plugged him in and he flies. You see, there's going to be people that have all kinds of impediments to their potential. You know what they need? Leaders that will breathe it out of them. There's all kinds of ways to do it. But if you get that kind of culture, people will start to come because they'll say, I'm next, and they'll line up because they know it's a culture that breeds leaders. That's how you reproduce them. All right? All right. Now, we're going to have... Oh, yeah. You have a mic?
Oh, Jesus. Thank you. Thank you, Wayne. Tell you what, I love that guy's spirit. And Wayne, I've had the opportunity to hang out with some of your staff members. And they model what you teach. And so I know it's real, and we just appreciate what you shared today. My name's Mac Lake, and I'm the leadership development pastor at Seacoast Church. John said, I've been there for about 3 years, and before I was there, I was a church planter like many of you in the Myrtle Beach area. How many of you are church planters right now, have been planting within the past year or so? Wow. Okay, quite a few of you. This is so exciting to be able to talk to you guys today, because when I was a church planter, I loved my church. I loved my people. I loved my staff, and I got a phone call one day from a guy that I was 7 years into the plant, and things were going really, really well. And I got a phone call from this guy one day, and he said, hey, Mac, I don't know how you're doing, but would you be interested in leaving where you're at and coming and doing leadership development and church planting, help this church with church planting initiative? And I said, thank you, but no thank you. I love my church, love my people, I'm happy and all this. All of a sudden, that job description would not leave my mind, and I kept telling my wife, Cindy, I keep flirting with this job description this guy told me about, and all of a sudden, I was just, you know, a mess in my heart and couldn't figure out what God was doing, because I love my church, but I love leadership development, and went on a 30-day journey of praying and searching God's heart and journaling and doing all the things you were talking about earlier, met with seven different men and just to seek what God was doing in my heart at that time. And the seventh man on that journey was Greg Surratt, who's the senior pastor at Seacoast Church. And I went and I sat down with him, and it was day 29 of my spiritual journey. And I said, Greg, you know, something's going on in my heart. Don't know what's going on. And I was 5 minutes into sort of just telling him, bemoaning, you know, what was going on in my life. And he said, come work for me. And I sort of laughed at him and brushed him off and went on to tell my story that God was doing something. He said, come work for me. And I said, what do you want me to do? He said, what do you want to do? And I said, well, over the past 30 days, God has really spelled out a job description in my journal. So I said, it's leadership development is my passion. And so he said, whoa, that's one of our greatest needs. He said, we have, at that time, they were a multi-site church with a few campuses. We're now 11 sites. And he said, we need leaders. We need to grow up leaders because this multi-site thing is our strategy. It's the way we're going, and we need to raise up leaders. You know, when we first started, we took the cream of the crop, and now we need to raise up some more leaders. So, hey, I understood that as a church planter. I thought, boy, I know the desperate need for leaders in churches. You know, I used to read it all the time. George Barna, it's in your notes there. He says, the central conclusion is the American church is dying to the lack of strong leadership. It's in this time of unprecedented and plentiful resources, the church is actually losing influence. And the primary reason is lack of leadership. And I would read that, and I used to say that all the time, and I believe it was true to a degree, but this is what hit me. I don't think the church has a leadership problem as much as we have a leadership development problem. I look back at my church plant, and I look at Seacoast. There are leaders all over the place. There are teachers who are leading classrooms of 30 kids. There are football coaches leading 80 students. There are presidents of banks and corporations. There are leaders all over our church. We need a better leadership development system. I was watching Monday Night Football one time when Steve Young was on there, and he was being inducted into the Football Hall of Fame. And they said, Steve, how in the world did you stay there behind Joe Montana all those years and play second string? How did you do that? Did you ever think about leaving? You could have started for any team in the NFL, but you chose to stay there and be second string. Was that difficult? He said, it was very difficult. They said, why did you stay? He said, I stayed because I knew Bill Walsh had a winning system. And I wanted to be a part of that winning system. And sure enough, in Walsh's years there, he took him to the Super Bowl 3 times. And when I heard that, I thought, you know what? I want to be a part of a church that has a leadership development strategy that is so effective that it maintains strong leaders and grows strong leaders. And so that leadership just is all over the culture of the local church, because it will absolutely change a church. Let me share with you 3 questions that they're in your handout. I'm going to answer the first 2 really, really quick, all right? The first one, as we at Seacoast look, where do we get leaders from? Our small group system, just like John described it perfectly. I mean, we look among our small groups because these are the people who have the Seacoast DNA. These are people who other people are following. So that's who we want to look for as leaders. We have what we call the leadership pipeline, again, that John referred to earlier. So what we want to see is the biggest fishing pond for us, for small group leaders, I mean, for future leaders, is our small group ministry. So we look down among our small group members, and we want some of those to flow up the pipeline to become small group leaders. And then we want some of those small group leaders to flow up the next part of the pipeline and become small group coaches. We want some of our small group coaches to flow up the pipeline and become our future small group pastors. And then we want them to flow up the pipeline and become our future campus pastors. And we've seen this work over and over and over again. Phil Strange at our Somerville campus, he was a farmer, and he joined Seacoast, and he became a small group member reluctantly. And then he became a small group leader. He became a coach. We brought him on staff. Now he's a campus pastor. So we've seen this over and over again. That pipeline just works. And we want to fill that pipeline up at every aspect. The second question is, how do people grow? And typically I do this in about a 45-minute session, but how do we grow leaders? Well, this was something I wrestled with so hard years ago. And I said, you know, who was the best leadership developer ever? It was Jesus Christ. And so I took the Gospels and just studied through the Gospels and said, what did Jesus do that made him such an effective leadership developer? And what I want to give you is 7 ingredients to a strong leadership development strategy. Whatever your leadership development strategy looks like, you know, make sure these 7 things are integrated into it. Number 1 is a confidence in people. All right, a confidence in people. Jesus had a confidence in people. He said, follow me and I will make you fishers of men. I will turn you into something you're not. 2 is connection. Connection. Jesus looked at his disciples and he said, I no longer call you servant. I call you friend. You're my friends. We've been hanging out together for 3 years. We need to connect with the people that we're developing. Leadership development is all about relationship and relating to each other. The third part, the third ingredient is continual personal growth. We're looking for people who are reading books, who are studying on their own, who are listening to tapes, you know, just constantly studying on their own, committed to continual personal growth. So we want to resource our people, our future leaders, with those types of resources. The next part, next ingredient of a healthy leadership development strategy is coaching, and that's one-on-one mentoring or one-on-two mentoring, spending time really helping people debrief what they're learning in life and leadership and growing them through that. And then the next part of the ingredient is cluster learning. Cluster learning is getting peers together so they can learn from each other, small groups leaders with small group leaders, small group coaches with small group coaches. And then the next part is challenge. We want to give them a challenge. We want to put them on the stage for 6 months with a guitar that's not plugged in, where they're having real life experience. You're giving them a challenge to stretch themselves. And then finally, conferences. We do two conferences, in-house conferences at Seacoast every year for our leaders to help grow them, because conferences sort of get you inspired and pumped up. Now, the one I want to spend the most of the time on here in the next 5 minutes is who in the world is going to do the training? Who will do the training? When I first went to Seacoast, they had they had Wednesday nights at 7 o'clock. They had leadership classes. All right, every Wednesday, 7 o'clock. And what they would do is we would make an announcement out to the masses, and we would get people into this class on Wednesday night at 7 o'clock, where Mr. Leadership Expert here, he would teach them how to be a leader. They would go through 8 weeks of how to be a small group leader, how to be a small group coach, how to be a pastor, that type of thing, and they would come out on the other end, they would be a leader. And so when I first came, they said, Mac, we want you to rewrite the curriculum, because in this class, Wednesday night, 7 o'clock, what's happening there is it's all lecture, and it's just not real good. So here's what I did. And plus, they said, here's what's going on. There's about 20 people showing up to this thing. Not good. We need to produce more leaders faster. So what I did is I decided to teach every one of those classes myself and rewrite it as I did it. Rewrote it, made it more interactive, more fun, more engaging, to where they had to actually practice the things they were doing and all that sort of thing. I was so proud of rewriting it and everything. And then guess what happened? How many people were showing up? 20 people were showing up. I was so discouraged. I was so frustrated. This is what I call the program-oriented approach to leadership development. And there's several drawbacks for this with the program approach to leadership development. Number one is this. For us, it was distance. Distance was a big problem for us. Our distant campuses, some 3-4 hours away, couldn't come in and participate in this. Second drawback was busyness. We would have 8 classes, and nobody would get 100% attendance. And they would always seem to miss the most critical aspects of their leadership development. That one class where you learn how to develop biblical community or how to ask good questions, those types of things. They would miss key classes. Third was timing. You can relate to this one, can't you? We would start in September, September 15th. We'd kick off the class. We would end it November 20th. And God has this sense of humor where on October 14th, he would lay on somebody's heart that they wanted to be a small group leader and they want to be trained. And what do? You look at them and you say, come see us in January. We'll sign you up for the next class. Oh, it was killing me. It was killing me. We had other problems. One was relational loyalty. They would come into this class and Mr. Leadership Expert would do all the training, and our small group pastors would send them to this training. When the training was over with, guess what? I had spent 8 weeks with these people, getting to know them, their families, doing social things with them, modeling for them, teaching them. They weren't loyal to the people, to the small group pastor whose flow they would be under. There was a loyalty problem. I think I gave you 4 on your handout, but let me give you a couple others real quick. The next one is artificial learning environment. It was an artificial learning environment. They weren't really on stage, you know, in doing the real thing. And then the last one, the last drawback is self-selected leaders. I was teaching a class one time, and it was one of the first times, and Greg walked by the room, and he looked in like this. And then he walked by again, and he looked in the room like this. And I thought, what is he doing? He's checking up on me. He told me later, he said, I walked by there and I saw some of the people that were in that class. I felt like jerking you out of there. Those people do not need to be leaders. But guess what? We announced it to the world and they came in and joined our class. All right. So it was self-selected leaders. These were problems. So I was wrestling with this and I was saying, God, this is not working. 3 minutes. All right. I said, this is not working. And this is driving me crazy. And so I was doing my devotions through the book of Ephesians. And it was Ephesians 4, 11, and 12. You know, it's our job description as pastors, right? And I'm reading this thing. And all of a sudden, the Holy Spirit grabbed my heart like never before. And here's my paraphrase of that verse. He has given us leaders to equip the saints to do the work of the ministry. I went, oh my goodness. He has given us what? He has given us leaders to equip the saints to do the work of the ministry. Looking at our leadership pipeline, campus pastors, those are leaders, aren't they? Small group pastors, they're leaders. Small group coaches, they're leaders. Small group leaders, they are leaders. Why has he given us leaders? To equip the saints to do the work of the ministry. So I said, oh my goodness, what if? What if we took Ephesians 4, 11, and 12 seriously? What if we really took it seriously and we moved from a program-oriented approach to leadership development to a people-oriented approach to leadership development? Where we would look at our leaders and our campus pastors and we say, hey guys, we want you to look beneath yourself and we want you to raise up the next level of leaders. Hey, small group pastors, we want you to look beneath yourself and raise up the next level of pastors. Small group coaches, we want you raising up the next coaches. Small group leaders, look among your small group members and you raise up the next level of small group leaders. And we presented this to the staff and they went, yes, that's what we want. Oh my goodness, I want to share more on this, but let me just give you the benefits, okay? Here's what we did. We created curriculum at every one of these levels. We trained our people how to use that curriculum in mentoring their people through this particular curriculum. Let me give you the benefits of this, all right? You can do this any place. We created and we put the classes online using a education management software called Moodle, and we put the classes in there. You can use this any place, okay? Second benefit is you can use it any pace. You can do it at any pace. You can do it in 6 weeks. You can do it in 12 weeks. You can do it in 3 months. It doesn't matter. You can do it in a year. It can take a year to go through the class. It doesn't matter. You can do it at any pace. And then you can do it. You can start at any time. At any time. It doesn't matter. If somebody comes to you on October 14th and says, God's moving on my heart, guess what? You can sign them up today. And then the other benefit is relational loyalty. And then leader-selected leaders is another benefit as well. All right, and then real-life experience through that. Now, here's what blew me away. Last thing on this one. Here's what blew me away is when I did the math. All right, I looked at our situation. So we have 10 campus pastors. We have about 40 small group pastors. We have about 100 coaches. We have about 400 small group leaders. That is close to 600 people that can be doing leadership development at church. Blew me away. Well, what if only 50% of them did it? I'll take it. 300 leadership developers. Hey, it's taken time. It's taken time, but it's absolutely transforming the leadership culture of our church. So I encourage you, grab a hold of this. The mentoring aspect, like these guys have already shared, apprenticing people and for the future, and you will see a leadership revolution take place in your church as you empower leaders to raise up other leaders. Thank you.
All right. So here we go. We're going to do some Q&A. And I actually got a couple questions through the questions email. And I got them right here on my little crackberry, blackberry. And let's see. I got one of the questions. That was a good question. It says, I would like to hear from John, Wayne, and Mac. So all three of you guys could think about this. Talk about the transitions of leadership development. You know, training is vitally important, but a bad handing off of the baton can be a disaster. So does that question make sense to you guys? And so whoever wants to kind of try to respond to that first, or if you need me to restate it. But we have just about probably 15 minutes at most for the Q&A time, so run with it.
The leadership development transition, is that what they're
That's
asking
correct,
for?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, guys, plan for it well in advance. I was talking with, as a church planter myself, when I left my church in Myrtle Beach, I had an associate who had been with me 5 years. And when God showed me, hey, it's time to leave, he had already been preaching. He'd already been leading. Everybody was used to him leading. It was a very easy transition. We sat down together when I knew God was telling me to move on. And I said, Sean, God's calling me. He's recommissioning me somewhere else. I can't resign this church because I love this church, but he is recommissioning me to somewhere else. And I feel like I want you to pray about this, but I feel like God wants you to take over. And then I want to work with you and the elders of our church and design an exit strategy to where we will begin to hand things over to you. So I would say get your key leaders involved with it. You know, get confirmation in the person that you're handing it over to, that this is something God's doing in their heart, confirmation in your heart, and help them with the process. We team preached a series called Crossroads, where we not only had processed it with our leaders, but then we processed the whole transition with our entire church as well, so that they understood exactly what was going on. So it made for a smooth transition.
Example I could think of, currently we have one of our guys that's a part of our lead team, Troy McMahon, who's been on staff at CCC for a number of years, and he's going to plant a church in Kansas City next year. He was a campus pastor at our largest campus, the campus that's been around the longest, our Naperville location. And, you know, certainly he's the kind of guy that you miss in a big way when he decides to make a move like that, but we're also celebrating the fact that he's going to go out and start something new. One of the things that's making that transition a little bit more palatable is the fact that the person that's going to take his place was at our Romeoville campus. As the
that
campus
we don't
pastor.
Like Troy. That's
well,
what
that,
makes it easier.
Well, that too.
Palatable.
That
okay,
too.
Go ahead.
But the guy that was at another location as a campus pastor was able to transition over there because he had an apprentice that he was developing as an apprentice campus pastor who will be able to take his place. And sure, it's still painful, but I think because those people were in the queue, we talked about it for a long time, planned for it, it makes it a lot easier.
Good. Wayne, you want to speak to that question?
Yeah, before any transition happens, remember this, passing the baton takes only a second. Passing the heart of that baton can take years. Before any transition, before even if you don't know what the transition will be, begin mentoring people. Just make that a part of your lifestyle. Because when you pass the DNA along and the hearts are transferred, when it comes time for a succession, you got tons. Their hearts are ready. They've got the DNA. They've got the vision. They understand what it means to encourage, to believe in the potential of people. And it makes the rest much easier. They'll be learning the rest of their life, but you'll never learn them up to the transition. But you can build their heart.
I actually got an email from somebody that asked the question, Mac, the training that you have online, is that something that's available to people who, can we access something like that? Is it viewable?
It's actually not yet. We're working with a company called Aspire One, and we hope to have that available in 2008. If you want to preview some aspects of it, you can go to www.mynextsteps.org, but you can't actually access the classes. The classes, they have to get into class, you have to be referred by a current leader and approved by the pastor underneath that person. And then you get an access code to get in, so that way we know exactly who's in our leadership pipeline.
Does that also apply? I got a follow-up question about the curriculum that's available to that you give to the staff members and to the volunteers to train them.
That's all online classes, right? And unfortunately, we can't allow others to access that yet, but 2008, we hope to have that ready.
You know, one thing we said, too, was that the cards that you guys get handed out to you, we have the ushers walking by picking those up. If you wrote down some questions, we'd love to get more of those from you guys right now. Is anybody, have we collected more cards? Do we have more that we've collected? No? We still have about 10 minutes of question time, so go ahead, throw out your questions. Who's got one? Raise your hand. Got a question. Yes, sir, right there.
How long to take to change it? Once the culture has changed in a new church, it depends on the receptivity of that, the trust that the people have in the leader that's making any changes. Trust factor is huge. The larger the trust, the quicker the transition. The least trust, the longer it takes. So you got to factor those inversely proportionate in that way. The other is, once it is change, you will see leaders building almost snowball fashion, little at first. And when it's little, make sure the quality is really, really good. You really zero in on quality, not quantity. Quality of every leader. Because once you get some bad leaders in the mix, and then more leaders start coming, you're going to spend all your time cleaning up poo-poos. And you won't have the rest. And then it goes bad, and it just stink after a bit. So really work on the quality.
Literally.
And then it moves. And then you just let it snowball.
Good. Any other questions maybe that somebody might have? Yes, sir. Go right ahead. Mr. Dummett.
Yeah, thank you very much, because that was when we presented this to our leaders, that was a big concern. And what we say, this is a high-tech, high-touch approach. Okay, you can't get in the class unless somebody has committed to meeting with you on a regular basis to actually mentor you. So actually what they do is they will go through one session on their own, which is online, and then they meet with their mentor. And they see the questions that the mentor will actually be asking them during that session. There's a mentor guide for the mentors, tells them exactly what to ask and how to approach the session. It tells them what challenges to give them along the way. So, for example, in how to be a small group leader class, you know, have them pray during the session, have them ask the icebreaker, have them lead a session, those types of things. Yeah, so it is high tech, high touch.
Are you sure if we're really, really nice to you, you can't get us access to that stuff?
It's coming soon.
You know, one question we got was kind of a big picture question. Didn't necessarily pertain to reproducing leaders, although it kind of has to do with this from a big picture standpoint. But we got a question, Wayne, about how when you guys are starting new churches and or starting new sites, how do you determine whether somebody's going to be a campus pastor or determine if they're going to be a church planter? And is it true? First, the question was, is it true that you do both? Which, from my understanding, it is true. But how do you determine who's ready for what? Maybe is the right question.
You won't know right at the beginning. It's people are sort of like the old Polaroid film, you know. It emerges. You see it getting more and more in focus. And at first, you won't have everything. Well, he's this and he's that and he's this. One guy we thought would not even make it into heaven is now a campus pastor leading a church of 500. And you just don't see that at first. So you've got to give them steps of leadership development, and you'll see it begin to emerge. So then you'll say, oh, he's a lead pastor. Oh, he's an administrator. Oh, and you'll see.
Do you feel like the campus pastor role, and since you guys are all multi-site, do you feel like the campus pastor role is different than a church planter role?
Yes and no. I think they're very similar. It demands somebody that has a track record of reproducing leaders. They've experienced that leadership pipeline without a doubt. We've had campus pastors that have become church planters. And I mean, let's face it, typically a church planter is somebody who thinks that they can do it better than the place they're in right now, at least on some level. And so they go ahead and do that. And when they do, you have two options. You can either get upset about it, or you can bless them and say, go get them and get behind it. And so we bless them and say, go get them and get behind it. But I don't think that, I would say that it takes anything away from what it means to be a campus pastor. I feel like from a leadership development standpoint and the kind of person that it takes, very similar. I mean, we often talk about, Jim Collins talks about level five leaders, and I think you need to be a level five leader if you're a campus pastor or a church planter. So I think they're very, very much the same. Oftentimes, you know, a church planter is the kind of person that's going to need to teach. Campus pastors don't necessarily need to teach, at least in our system. And so sometimes a campus pastor might decide, well, I'd like to teach more often. And so one of the ways that they can do that is to become a church planter.
Any of you guys care to comment to that as well?
We start people off as campus pastors, and it's a video download, and they MC it. And so we really save them a whole day or so a week of trying to study for their weekend message. So they'll have my download. But what they'll do is they'll have tons of time then to build leaders, build teams, build small groups, build life groups. I mean, just tons of stuff that they have to do. If they did both out of the blocks, they'd trip. But now we get them doing one. And then when I'm like here, this weekend they all are teaching on their own. Okay. Next week I'm in Dallas, they all teach live. So when I'm gone, they teach live. And then after 3 years, we cut them off of the video little by little.
Okay.
And then by the end of 3 years, they're teaching 80% of the time. My video is 20% of the time. And then we charter them and they can still use the video when they want to, but basically they've launched.
Okay, I got a quick question. Are you looking for that teaching gift early on then when you decide that they're going to be a campus pastor because you know that at some point they'll be teaching?
We look for the leadership gift, and if it doesn't come up where the person is teaching or can teach, or that's not his forte, we leave them on the video longer. And we bring up teaching pastors with them because he may have a great leadership gift. He just may not be the lead communicator. So we bring in those that are teaching pastors, and it becomes more of a leadership driven. And then they've got teaching pastors. So it has a little different model, but it works great.
Well, hopefully this has created some dialogue in your heart and in your mind as you're kind of trying to figure some next steps when it comes to reproducing leaders. We got to wrap this session up, and we're going to come back together at 4:15.